Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today's guest on With Respect is some we've had in the past, Kieran Conway. Kieran, in the past, talked about his background and his life, but we're going to talk some more about his experiences in life and some of his music. And we will be talking to him about Ireland, America, and the world. This is John Smetanka, With Respect, with Kieran Conway. We'll be right back. So, Kieran, how are you today?
Great, John.
Good. Well, you know, the last time that we talked, you gave us a thumbnail of your life, which was filled with zigs and zags. And I've always said to people that the most interesting people that I run across on this show or in my life as a lawyer are the ones who didn't go on a straight line from age six straight on through to become king of the world or whatever without any variation. It's the ones that go back and forth and doors open, doors close, people die, people get sick, divorce, marriage, all this sort of things, they really make for an interesting person.
Mm.
And it builds, I think, character.
Mm.
So, you did a lot of zigging and zagging.
Yeah.
Let's remind people briefly. You came from Kilkenny, Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Family of five.
Yeah.
Mom and dad.
Yeah.
Mom was royalty, did
well,
you say?
No, there was some royalty on her side. Her grandfather lived in a castle in England, beautiful castle,
uh-huh.
And that's on her background. My father was a family that owned a pub in Kilkenny,
mm-hmm.
And it really catered too for if you were down and out on hard luck on your money, you could always go to Conway's and get a pint. And as you walked in the front of the pub, there was a little shopping area where you could buy eggs, milk, some groceries. And then you go through swing doors, and it was just the men only in there.
Ah.
And they'd bet on horses, they'd drink, and then the women had to wait outside with the groceries and the kids. That was the kind of pub it was, you
okay.
see. And also, you know, we were raised Catholic, but my grandmother, my father's mother, was fanatical. And whenever we came back from Africa and we had to go back to stay at Conway's in Kilkenny, we had to go to confession three times on a Saturday. Now, when you're a little...
Three times?
Three times. Breakfast, lunch, and then the evening. And when you're a little kid, an innocent kid, too, I'm walking up this back alleyway trying to think up lies so I could tell the priest. You know, and then he knew who we were because he'd say, "So how's your vacation going?" Well, he said holidays, you know, and I go, "You mean I've just told him, I've just lied to him, right?" Just to keep my grandmother happy, you know, and that's, and my mother hated that side of it. So so that's how we were raised and back then to Africa and then eventually on to England and, there's all over the place, but the one thing that I always felt, my life took its own path, you know, especially when I got ill with cancer. After that, when you have two homes and cars, and how do you pay for all that now? You're self-employed. I was self-employed as an entertainer, so what happens now? How am I going to do all this? And my path then, I was fascinated with the iPad had just come out, and I'm lying in bed in hospital and going, this is going to change the world. This iPad's going to change the world. And I really got into it, and doctors were coming in, how did you do that? And then I was able to FaceTime my family in England, and the Indian nurse would come in, how are you doing this, please? Because I need to call my family too in India. And I was teaching nurses and doctors on this iPad. So that eventually then got me working with Apple for 2 years. And then after Apple, it went to the restaurant business. They came after me to be the general manager of this beautiful restaurant. And I eventually took it because I thought, you know, my whole life is, now what am I going to do?
Well, so, all right, restaurant, you leave Apple to go to be a general manager of a restaurant. Where was the restaurant?
In LaGrange, Illinois. Beautiful. I can name it, I suppose, can I?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Aurelio's. They're a franchise chain.
LaGrange, Illinois?
Right there on Calendar Avenue, right in the heart of downtown LaGrange. Beautiful restaurant. And what it was, the owners were going to Naples, Florida to open up another one. And they wanted somebody that would basically... It was a trust issue. You had to, when you leave a multi-million dollar business, you need to know somebody you trust.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just, you know, fans of the pizza, as well as, you know, we were not regulars, but we became friends with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they approached us three times about, and I turned it down three times. And then I said, you know what? When would I ever get that experience of running a corporate restaurant with no experience? You know, that's the other thing.
Did you cook before that?
No, I never cooked in my life. Barely boil an egg. But I didn't cook there. I was the general manager, so I was... Yeah.
Aurelio's restaurant. Now, you say it was on Calendar Avenue. Okay.
But they're franchised all over the place.
How far from the LaGrange Theater was that?
Oh, about 100 yards.
I lived in LaGrange. I grew up
really?
In LaGrange. I did.
Wow.
I did, and I remember going to the LaGrange Theater. We saw many movies there.
Yeah.
And then there was a hobby shop around the corner down, I can't remember the name of the street, but it was off the main street. It's the block over. The point is that I remember LaGrange.
Yeah, it's
so
beautiful.
Our paths crossed again.
Well, that place now is like a Las Vegas strip of restaurants. There's like 40 restaurants in downtown LaGrange.
Really?
Yeah. So we lived a block away from the theater, and we just walk into town, and I said, if ever an Aurelio's Pizza ever ends up in this town, or an Indian restaurant, we'll never leave. And that's exactly what opened. That was a few years ago, Kama Indian Bistro, the best in the world. And anyway, so I took the opportunity. I said, well, you know, here's an opportunity to learn or zigzag again, see where it leads to. But my whole life since I got ill was the computers with Apple, then into the food business, and then we end up at Comways, and I'm in... the food business, and I'm running the whole thing on an iPad mini. The whole business.
Yeah.
It's amazing with the square, and I do any of the graphics and making the cards and the t-shirts all on an iPad mini.
Well, let me stop back. In our last show, you talked about one of the zigs in your life was getting cancer, esophageal cancer, and it was a brutal, brutal thing.
Yeah.
And I remember you told us that your salvation was actually getting your blood going.
Mm-hmm.
And you walked and you walked and you walked.
Yeah.
And then you walk some more.
Yeah.
Now you've been talking about we, and every so often you come up with Lorraine. Who is this Lorraine? Tell me about it. Who is she? I've heard
my wife.
You need to talk about her.
Yeah, my wife who dragged me through cancer, literally, I mean, step by step. She said, when I got cancer, well, you know, she'd come into the hospital every day. I was in isolated, very isolated, and she'd have to come in, dress as a space, you know, had the whole helmet on, like she was going to the moon.
Yep.
And, you know, every morning she had to go to work, and she'd shower and have her hair done and then come in and have to put that all on. Now that's... Yep. So at 4 in the morning, and
spacesuits you're talking about are to protect you from
germs.
because I had no resistance.
Yeah, zero resistance. I was very vulnerable to anything, and I got many of the diseases you catch in a hospital that'll take you out because you have no resistance. MRSA and Stephen Johnson syndrome, which is a huge, where your body just explodes and boils to get rid of the poison. It's just, anyway, it was rough. And I forgot where I was going with that. Who was Lorraine? Yeah.
Well, so, Lorraine.
Yeah. So
how did you
she
meet her?
Said, I met her when I first came to America, so she reminded me. And, but she worked for a heart specialist for, well, still there, 19 years. And I used to perform at this huge charity event every year, the Mulliganeers, and there used to be an Irish band always up before me, and they were all doctors, and they sang rebel songs too. Mm-hmm. But they were all, and he always used to say to Lorraine, who ran his business, get him to come on for a check, a stress test. Right, so she, every year, we'd meet and stress test, and we got to know each other because she's from Ireland and her family are still all there.
Where in Ireland is she from?
In Donegal.
Okay, that's up northwest, right?
Northwest, beautiful up there. And years later, he comes into Conway's now, and he says, when was your last stress test? He said, I've had a stress test for the last 16 years. I married her. And that was the joke. But, while I was laid up and ill, Lorraine really got into cooking and started doing her mother's traditional Irish scones. And, when we first opened Conway's, the traditional Irish scones, the Americans like their scones big, fat, And she'd call her mother and said, I think I'm going to change the scones and make them bigger. And she said, do not do that. If you do that, it won't be the traditional scone and you'll have to add more raisins and it'll mess it all up. So that's, okay, all right, we'll leave it like that. We serve it. And it's funny, I never thought we'd ever have to tell people how to eat an Irish scone. We cut it in half and then you butter and jam it. The English will put clotted cream on it, and because we get people cut it like a birthday cake. Is this how we do it? We cut it in little birthday cake slices, and they're dunking it in the jam. I said, no, you're coming in for a 6-week training program on how to eat scones. So Lorraine got into the cooking side of it, and she promised that if I survived cancer, she would run the Chicago Half Marathon in Chicago, and she'd never run in her life. So, and didn't do much training. I said, Lorraine, it's another 3 months, you're going to be running half a marathon. You better get going. So she started jogging a little. And so on the day of the marathon, how thousands of people lined up waiting for the gun to go. I'm standing right behind her with a camera. I said, and I'll be here to film you when you come through. Because this is a big deal for her, to run half a marathon. Well, when she started running, I look left and right, and I'm in a sea of people, and I can't move left or right, and I'm getting run over, and I start walking, and I literally walk maybe 200 yards, and there is an African-American woman right beside me, looked like she was going to have a heart attack, and she was heavy. I mean, I'd say maybe probably 350 pounds, and she's in trouble, and she's sweating, and she's holding on to me. She's holding my arm, and I said to her, my body goes down fast because I don't have a stomach. So I have to constantly have food or water or some orange juice. I said, do you want, and I had a bottle with me with water and orange. And I said, you need some water. She took my bottle. She took a swig and then she threw it all over her head, showered herself. Oh, and I think, Christ, there goes my life support. So we get, I still can't get off the road, and she's holding on to me. We get to the first corner, and there's a gospel band, and she went, "Oh Lord, this is my gospel band for church," and she's hallelujahing with them, and I'm going, "Oh wow!" I said, "Have you ever run a marathon before?" And she went, Oh, yeah. She said, I ran last year. My daughter's ahead of me. And through the eyes of the Lord and the band here, I'm going to do it again. And she's talking to me like this. And I go, okay. We get to the next corner, another gospel band. And she's talking about, she knows that band and blah, blah. And then I look around at her and she's gone, completely gone. And I'm standing there, literally turning circles, going, how can I lose a 350 African-American woman? I can't see her. And she was gone. And somebody always said, do you think that was some kind of guiding angel? And I said, no, my bottle of orange went. I said, so anyway, I'd got maybe 2 miles at this point, and I'm waiting to circle back now into Grant Park so I can wait. But the trail went all the way off. And maybe 4 hours later, I get a call from Lorraine. Where are you? And I said, well, you know, from where I'm at now, I can see the skyline of Chicago. I've got about 4 miles away. What are you doing? Where did you go? I said, I walked it. So she ran the marathon, I walked it. And on the last mile, there were people ringing blue bell. I said, you'll see me cross the line. I'll wave a white hanky. And the last mile, there were people ringing blue bells, Cancer of America. And I said to one of them, where can I get a blue bell to cross the line with Cancer of America? And she said, oh, well, you know, we're here to support the Cancer of America runners. You've had to donate to Cancer of America to get one of these bells. I went, oh, okay. So then I saw another one. I said, where can I get one of those blue bells? I had to cross the line ringing a blue bell, Cancer of America. And she said the same thing. Oh, no, we're supporting the Cancer of America runners and blah, blah, blah. And this went on, five of them, I asked. And then the last one, I just said to her, I knew the story, the answer. I said, where can I get one of those bells to cross the line with? And she went, oh, no, blah, blah. So I said, okay, I'm just 10, 15 yards away. She said, do you want my bell? And I went, wow, could I? And I took the bell off her, and I crossed the line ringing the bell. And so that was it from that day on. I knew then I could walk. So I walked 13 miles that day from where before I'd only walked a mile. Mm-hmm. And then I took off every day, 5, 10, 15. Lorraine, I'd call Lorraine, where are you now, she'd say.
We're going to stop right now and take a break. This is fascinating. We're talking to Kieran Conway. Kieran is the manager, the owner, along with this Lorraine, who we're going to find out some more about, of Conway's restaurant, Cafe, in Three Oaks, Michigan, near the Vickers Theater and the railroad tracks. This is John Smetanka, and we're on With Respect, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Kieran Conway, who's the owner of Conway's Restaurant in Three Oaks, Michigan. But he has been all around the world, literally, singing and playing rugby, which we talked about on our last show, and now is telling us about how cancer was one of the zigs in his life that has caused him to do some new things. Run a restaurant.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Well, when we bought Conway's, well, the running Aurelio's restaurant was very, very stressful. Very stressful. And, you know, you got 50 staff. And when you got 50 staff and you're trying to keep everybody calm and do your thing. And it was just too much. I was working 14 hours a day. And you have to do the bookkeeping, and when you're bookkeeping for a corporate restaurant, they want to know where every penny is, and so some mornings I wouldn't get out of there till 4 a.m. You know, so. But this building, we always loved this area, Three Oaks. The farmland here is probably some of the prettiest in America, and world class beaches here, which I always say. We had people from Australia in our place this summer from Sydney, and they said, "Good God, Well, I thought that was an ocean. You know, they were down at the beach on Union Pier. And so it's got everything. It's got the weather, too. I mean, beautiful weather here in the summer, so you can have the beaches. Then you got the fall colors. This last fall was just like every tree had a light bulb under it. Mm-hmm. And I always loved, and I love the seasons, and I love this area. So this building that came up, Conway sitting on the track, always looked so Irish to me, that little, and I always thought that'd mm-hmm. make a great little pub
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Yep.
So when we eventually got the building, it was when we saw it sale pending with, I guess, two other restaurateurs that were turning it into a kind of a microbrewery type wine mm-hmm. tasting. And that didn't go through because of licensing, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And we were next in line. And then it became, wow, we got the building. What are we going to do now? You know, what are we going to do? And because we didn't have a liquor license, so it can't be a pub. So we thought, well, what do we? We always drove around looking for just somewhere we could get a coffee and a sandwich or a pastry, and that's it. We never wanted to sit down and have a waitress and table. Excuse mm-hmm. me, can you get our mm-hmm. waitress? We want to go. So we did everything. We've done everything kind of casual, where it's in a basket. So once you've come in, ordered, and paid, you can sit outside or sit and go whenever you want. And it's amazing, too. We've in the corner, I've never told anybody this, but I say, I've written return baskets, and everybody gets up and cleans their table and puts the baskets away, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally you get somebody that doesn't, but you go out and clean the table. So,
yeah.
But it's great how that system is working. So it's casual, even though put a lot of passion into the what we do.
Well, I was telling you that the reason I met you was I was looking for something light to eat, and I saw Conway's, and somebody had told me that they had been there and that it was a great restaurant. So I stopped there one Saturday and talked to you and visited with you and had some Irish stew.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was really good.
With the little Guinness in it, right?
Well, with a little Guinness.
Yeah.
In it. Yeah. A little touch of the creature. But so my... Then I became fascinated with the little details around the place, which were unique. And I got a charge out of one sign which said something about crake.
Crack. Come in for the crack.
Come in for the crack. And it was spelled C-R-A-I-C.
Correct.
Yeah. So I thought, that's an interesting word. So while I was sitting waiting for you to deal with other customers, I checked, I did a Wikipedia on crake and found out the history of the word. It's a fascinating word.
Yeah.
Which means today, chit-chat.
Yeah, well, it means a good time, conversation, fun, laughter. And it became really popular in Ireland and England around the 90s. It's, you know how in America certain words come around and they're mm-hmm. buzzwords for a few years and then it disappears. And but it came from the English word, you crack me up. And laughter, and the Irish took it and spelt it that way, C-R-A-I-C, and the English loved it and kept it, and that's why it's in the English dictionary. And if you're in a conversation in Ireland or England, and the word crack will come up 20 times in 5 minutes.
Really?
And you use it too, like, where are you going tonight for the crack, meaning where are you going out to? We had a great crack last night, a lot of fun and laughter, and... Or they'll also say it like, so what's the crack? Meaning, what's up?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on, you know? So we put it on our sign outside at Conway's. We've also put it on our T-shirts, and we have people coming in and say, well, yeah, I'll have a coffee, and we'd like to try a portion of the creek. I said, we had a line one day, and I said, it's crack. I said to this one woman, there's 3-4 women beside her, I said, it's crack. And she said, oh, okay. Crack. I said, you'd like to try something? She said, and yes, what is it? I said, it's drugs. I said, do you do drugs? And she reeled back and looked at me and she went, well, just occasionally. I didn't bust it. So it was, I explained to her then exactly what I said, you know, it's fun, laughter, joke. And then they relaxed. But we have it on all our T-shirts, and I don't know if we're known as the crack house of Three Oaks now or what, but it's a nice little slogan to have now, because it is a genuine word in there, and it's a fun word too.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it shows how language moves back and forth around the world. Mm-hmm. Words that were slang someplace else all of a sudden become trendy, and now it's we make up a word. Mm. One of the beauties of the English language is that we create words, and especially the American version of English. Lots of fascinating words. There's a new there is a program up in Sault Ste. Marie at Lake Superior State University, and every year they come up with the words that we want to take out of the English language, condemn them, get rid of them. Invariably, they are from computerisms, they are from commercials on television, because we have picked it up out of some place or other, some wherever, and made it a part of our lingo, our jargon. Mm. And then we repeat it over and over and over again, and that loses a lot of its punch. And that's when Lake Superior State University says, out with it, get rid of it. But eventually it ends up in Lake dictionaries.
Well, even words today that mean the opposite now are meant good. You know, like somebody says, oh, man, that's sick, meaning that's good.
Yeah.
And my mother, you know, she comes over walking down Michigan Avenue, we're going to a hotel. She said, I love a coffee. She always used to say that. I love a coffee. We go in and she'd say to me, why do they always offer you a room when you order coffee here in America? And I said, what do you mean? Well, they always say, would you like room? Oh, I said, they want to know if you want room for cream. She's thinking she's getting a room in the hotel for a cup of coffee. I said, it's the American way, Ma. It's a half sentences.
I always kid my English friends that as they go through their sentences, I always swear that what they do is they swallow the last, first of all, they swallow the last syllable of virtually all their words. Secondly, they swallow the ending of the sentences, and you just kind of have to assume that you know what
you're right,
and that what they were going to say. And I find that the other one that used to bug me was E-R, A-R, O-R, the R is gone.
Yeah.
It's I can't even think of, arena becomes arena. And they bring in an R there, but then they take it off, so it'd be minor would be mina.
Yeah.
And, you know, I keep trying to catch up with them. It takes me about 3 or 4 days before, when I'm there, to finally get back into the swing of the pronunciation, the lingo.
Well, I used to say that on stage when I was in Chicago. I'd say Illinois deliberately because because this is how I would heckle the crowd. I would say Illinois, and they go, it's Illinois. And I go, well, there's an S in there. So it's Illinois. No, it's not. It's Illinois. And they'd shout back at me. So I'd always tell this joke about two truckers driving to Florida. And one says, look at that, Bill. We're in Louisville, Kentucky. And he goes, it's not Louisville. It's Lowville, Kentucky. He said, no, it's Louisville. He said, there's an S right in there. He said, well, it's pronounced Lowville. He said, I'll tell you what we're going to do then. We're going to pull right in here. We're going to ask one of the good old boys here where we're at. So they pull the truck in and they go into this building. They go, my friend Bill here wants to know where we're at. And before you tell him, make sure you speak slowly and clearly. And he goes, Wendy's.
We're going to take a break right now at that point. And we're talking to Kieran Conway, who is the owner and manager and cook at Conway's Cafe, Restaurant, what is it?
Cafe, be the closest.
In Three Oaks, Michigan. This is John Smetanka. We're on With Respect, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Kieran Conway, who has had a fascinating life full of zigs and zags, but is now settled in Three Oaks, Michigan, for a period of time. We don't know where the wind is going to blow him next. But he's got a restaurant, cafe, place for Irish scones and crack in Three Oaks, Michigan. This is John Smetanka on With Respect. So, Kieran, we've talked about language. We talked about the vagaries of trying to fight cancer, which you had. And you did it with walking, with getting your juices going, and getting some sleep. Basically, good health.
Yeah.
Good, healthy things to do.
Yeah. I wouldn't say my diet is good health, because they always said, oh, you know, keep off sugars and keep off that, keep off this. But I just carry, well, one, I couldn't eat for 3 years. So I was on a feeding tube. It took me about 3 years to get my, so I could digest like a cereal bowl full of food type of thing. And so it took a long time for that. But at that point, anything I could get down me, good or healthy or bad, I had to get it down me. Especially my body drops like sugars. I can go out into a coma if I'm, because I've no real way of digesting it. Your intestines become your new stomach. And I often I said to the doctors, I said, well, what happened to all the acids and enzymes that break down your food? Where do they all go when you take the stomach out? They said they all, your intestines becomes your new, they learn how to do it.
This
is amazing. Your body is incredible, because there's many times I've called her and said, I need grapes. I need red grapes, not green grapes. I need grapes. And right now I need some apples. And it's my body telling me, it's craving it, craving it. I need yogurt, and it had to, and I'd be, I wasn't able to say anything. It just came right through my head to tell me, and I get that down me, and I'd
be fine.
Yeah.
It is, you know, we joke about expectant mothers wanting different combinations of things, cravings. But, you know, it is all a variation of that. That maybe that is the chemicals. The body is saying the craving is actually a good message.
Yeah, and it, if you listen, like they say, listen to your body a little. And that's what it took over. I didn't have a choice. It just, but luckily I can eat any food in the world, any spices, and but I just got to be careful, because I go one step over it and I'm in trouble again, because I really just got like a tube, a lining, and if I overdo it, my body has to go through this amazing amount of energy to digest what I've just eaten, and I can go out.
So you got to be careful.
Yeah, very. But I don't eat much. I mean, calmly, I'm on the run anyway, and you're always sampling food too.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly.
Now, are you still entertaining?
No. And now, having said that, when we opened Conway's, a really good friend of mine, this is funny, when I got my first, when I first came to America, it was a Monday night, I walked into a Chinese restaurant, and there was a country singer singing in the corner, and I went, wow, this country is amazing. They even got country singers in a Chinese restaurant on a Monday. They must love country. And me and him, for years, became... we kind of ran parallel. He was a terrific country singer. He just was doing stuff with Travis Tritt last summer. And we've become friends and over the years. And we lived around the block from each other for about a year, and we didn't know it. And one day he's cutting the grass without his cowboy hat. And I went, he would look just like Bernie Glim if he had a hat on. And one day he shouts at me, Kieran! And I look around, it is him. So when we... he said, I'm going to come and sing on your stage that we have built out on the side of the building last summer. And he came down, kind of a favor, I would say, for me, but just to give me a kick in the butt. It's about time he got back on stage. And I'm inside, you know, bussing the tables and running sandwiches. And he's telling everybody outside, you know, Kieran in there used to perform on stage in, what, the busboy? And they got me out, and it took me a minute or, well, it took me quite a bit to get up on stage and tune up the guitar. And then I started singing a song, and I was completely off key, and went, oh, this is embarrassing. And I stopped the song, and I stopped for a minute and go, what did I used to do on stage? I got to quickly think now, because everybody's looking at me. And I just started doing, I think I started heckling the crowd. And I took off for like half an hour, Bernie. And he's listening in today. He's gone through a little health issues like too. So he helped me. And we did half an hour together. And he's saying, we should do this. Now, he was working with Travis Tritt at, mm-hmm. at the time. And where I go back on stage with him, and he has a beautiful seven-piece band, and his wife and his daughter play fiddles and all that, and it's really top line. And mm-hmm. and he'd like, because I do a lot of I'm comedy too, you see. I'm not just everybody thinks, oh, he's Irish, or sing us Danny Boy, which is usually the only song they
want to hear. Can,
but I was never that anyway, that kind of entertainer. I was comedy and sang everything and could do impressions, and that's really what got me in
your
the
job.
Entertainment world, yeah, because to Vegas and stuff like that, it was the comedy, not it wasn't the singing at all, you know.
Well, all right, now what we're going to try out, I want to hear one of my favorite songs, because it happens to be that my ancestors, some of them, came from County Cavan. Mm-hmm. And in County Cavan, there's a town called Bally James Duff. Mm-hmm. And you and I have talked about this before, but I would like to hear you sing Come Back, Paddy Riley, mm-hmm. to Bally James Duff.
All right.
And while you're setting up your guitar here, I want to tell you that I went to hear an Irish tenor sing over at the Acorn Theater the other day, and he called out for I will take some suggestions from the audience, and I don't do this on regular, but I was enjoying it so much I yelled out, "Come back, Paddy Riley!" And he said, "Ah, I don't even know if I know those words. You'll have to help me." I said, "I give you 50% of them. I can't give them all." But anyway, he sang it beautifully, and the accompanist did a nice job. And later on, after I met him, as I met him after the show, he said, "Well, you know, it's interesting because I grew up," he said, "as a little city, a little village right near Bally James Duff."
Yeah.
And that's where he was born and raised.
Yeah, I was there that night. What a singer, beautiful
Wasn't
control.
He great voice. And, you know, you were talking about earlier the talent that comes to the Acorn Theater. Mm. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's world class. I mean, he's world class. He's part of the Celtic Thunder show. And his pianist, Seamus, was beautiful. I mean,
magnificent,
touch. I love piano players that just touch and float rather than pound, you know, and take over his voice. But, they were excellent. And they actually came into Conway's, you know, just the nicest people. And to think, you know, he was flying back the next day to Ireland and in the other side of the world again, you mm-hmm. know. Yet he'd been through America and got a standing ovation at the Acorn. It's amazing what the power of song and music does. And
it is. It is absolutely.
Yeah. And
a recent guest I had who was an athlete and going around the world now. She's a world-class athlete, and she is now retired from active sports. She was an all-American basketball player. But now she's going around the world helping women and anybody who will listen to improve their self-image and to get out and to exercise. And to it has the power of uniting people.
Mm-hmm.
Athletics does. And she was saying that towards the end of the show, she was saying, I said, "Well, why basketball? Why sports?" And she said, I am convinced that two things are worldwide, sports and music."
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's perfectly true.
Mm.
I can listen to Ladysmith Black Mombasa, the African group from South Africa, and listen to their music, which is beautiful. And or singers from all over the world or musicians from all over the world. Mm. And it, I have a bond with those people. Mm. I have a bond. Mm. And they have, as they perform, their audiences around, as you did, around the world, you get to find the unity that humanity has. Mm. And you know, we talk about its diversity, but it's also, music is a bond to the world.
Oh, yeah.
As is humor.
Yeah.
As is humor.
Oh, yeah. And to me, laughter was everything. Because the schools we were brought up in was very strict. Mm-hmm. You're laughing? And we were caned. Back in those days, it was caning was the corporal punishment. And I've never regretted being caned, ever. People would say,
really?
Oh, that's brutal.
Oh.
But, you know, it really kept you in line. And there was nothing. I remember when I came out of that kind of schooling, and it wasn't that the priests were vicious. That was the rule. But we were caned for stuff that, okay, that you wouldn't cane anybody for. But it was the rule. So you took it like a man kind of thing. But and I've never regretted it because
what did it give you? What did it give you?
Well, it gave me... when I got to university, I met the Welsh guys. It was the first time in my life I could laugh without looking over my shoulder and go, you know, you caught sniggering. Okay, Conway, come up here. Come to the class. Cane. But I couldn't believe I can laugh. And I had so much fun at university that laughter became what I was after then. And that's why when I went to the clubs in the north of England and Wales, the crowd got so much enjoyment at heckling the entertainment. The laughter was all there. So I understood that, and I got into the funny. I loved to laugh. That was my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I got into more the comedy side than I did the singing side. I prefer to laugh than even sing. I used to bore myself on stage, and somebody said, oh, I got to sing this song? Oh, no. And I'd get halfway through the song, and I'd crack a joke or something, and it was all became the shtick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And laughter was everything. But the caning, and it gave you that kind of, you can take it. No matter what comes your way in life, you can take it. Then rugby was a huge physical game, and that toughened you up. And I knew after rugby, caning, I can take on anything. Now I've just got... Then to walk on stage is the most frightening thing you'll ever do in your life. Stage fright is frightening.
I know.
And even more so than my first game for... Gloucester Rugby, where you're running out in front of thousands of people, and it's your first time ever. But I knew I had 14 other guys that were like an army behind you that they'll kill to save you. But when you walk on stage, you're on your own.
When I was in my first year of college, we had an annual musical, and we put on a play, Oklahoma, by Rodgers and Hammerstein, and God knows why, but I somehow got hooked into doing a solo in Rodgers in Oklahoma. I don't to this day remember even what song I sang, but I do remember the sheer terror of being in front of 400 other students, my friends, my enemies, all of that, and I had to perform, and I couldn't see them because the spotlight was on me. So I was singing to who I knew were people were going to laugh me to death afterwards. I knew it because I was going to blow it.
Mm.
But I actually, that was my one solo that I remember. And I remember it's the only time I've really had stage fright.
Mm.
I was terrified.
Yeah, when the place goes silent and the lights, a lot of people don't realize when the lights are up in your eyes, behind those lights, it's darkness.
Yeah.
And often I was performing in front of 200, 300, 400 people and bigger when it got, and you always felt you were on your own in that room by yourself. I may as well just turn off the lights in my bedroom and just sang to the wall. But that's why I had to bring in the people into the act.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I started heckling people. I remember once there was a guy who played Minnesota Vikings. He was in the crowd. Huge guy. He came up to me at the end, about 6'5", 350 pounds. He said, "I've never in my life been so scared to go for a pee." he sat there for 3 hours, never went, because he knew as soon as he stood up in front. And I used to have a spotlight that was part of my game. Yeah. I'd hit people with a spotlight.
Yeah.
And it became great. People would bring in friends and set them up. They'd say, "Shout up to him." You know, I'd be on stage now, shout up to him. "Hey, when's the entertainment start?" You know. Gotcha. It was like fishing, waiting for the first person.
Yeah, yeah.
It was fun, though. Everybody, it was just fun. And the crowd became part of your act.
Yeah.
And they came because of that. They loved it.
Well, we're going to take a break now, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to sing Patty Riley, "So Help Me God." We're talking to Kieran Conway, who is the owner and manager and cook at Conway's Restaurant in Three Oaks, but also a worldwide talent and a rugby player, and world-class rugby player, where he almost broke every bone in his body, but he came out with it, great experiences, and he's helped us to learn about this brutal but beautiful sport. We'll be right back. This is John Smetanka and With Respect. We're now back with Respect with Kieran Conway from Kilkenny, Ireland, now a resident of southwestern Michigan, Harbor Country, owner of Conway's Restaurant, folk singer, Irish folk singer, but also entertainer, primarily entertainer, going around the world, a cancer survivor, been on cruise ships everywhere, Las Vegas, on and on and on, and finally has settled in our area for the time being. But this is John Smetanka saying, Patty Riley. It's a song that, as I said, my ancestors came from Ballyjames Duff, the area around Ballyjames Duff in northern. Cavan is the only, or one of the only parts of the original province of Ulster, which are part of the Republic, as opposed to being in Northern Ireland. Yeah. But that's another thing which we'll raise up after we sing.
Yeah. Well, this was a song, I never realized it, but my father used to whistle it.
Yeah.
And then when I came to America, people used to say, could you sing Come Back Patty Riley? And I go, no. Well, then you were telling me you requested mm-hmm. Emmett Cahill to sing it the other night at the Acorn Theatre, and did I know it? And I said, well, I've sung it a couple of times back in the day, so thank God for Google. I Googled the words just before I got here. And so I'm going to try it now. My father used to whistle it, so I'll see how I can... The garden of Eden has vanished, they say, but I know the lie of it still. Just turn to the left at the bridge of the night and stop in halfway to Coat Hill. It's there I will find it, I know sure enough, when fortune has come to my call. Oh, the grass, it is green around Ballyjames Duff, and the blue sky is over it all. And tones that are tender and tones that are gruff, they're whispered over the sea. Come back, Paddy Riley, to Bally James Duff. Come home, Paddy Riley, to me. This is all I think I remember my father used to do. And there I will find it, I know sure enough, when fortune has come to my call. Oh, the grass, it is green around Bally James Duff. Oh, the blue sky is over it all.
All right. Amen. I love it.
Wow. I haven't sung that song in about 30 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting when my mother and dad and I were traveling through Ireland many years ago, we got to Bally James, actually to County Cavan, and we're getting directions on where we might find Bally James Duff, and can we find whether there are any Connertys around. And so we went to the library. Actually, first of all, we went to the City Hall, and there's this tall, long drink of water fellow there, I said to him, we're here to see if we can find our family. And he says, ah, what's your name? And I said, well, it's John Smetanka, and we're looking for our kin. And he got on the phone. He said, call Mrs. Cahill over at the library and said, ah, Mrs. Cahill, got a young man here. He's come home from the States, and he wants to find his people. Can you help him? His name? Oh, yes. What was your name again? Smetanka. Yes, Smetanka is home from the States, and he wants... It's Polish. It's a Polish name. Yeah.
And he's trying to look it up.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I went out. We went out to a pub out in Bally James Duff. We had looked around the cemeteries to try to find Connertys, but we couldn't find them. Make a long story short, my mother was allergic to the cold, and this was not this was a cold time. Mm. We were stunned at how beautiful Ireland was. Mm. Just stunned. Loved it. And as we were driving out past Bally James Duff to where the old farm might be, I said, Mom, how could our people leave this beautiful country? It's so beautiful. And she said, John, just remember this. You can't eat scenery.
True.
And it's true. And that's what happened. But we got to a point where we had to make a turn off onto a side road to go up to talk to a fellow who was 100 years old and theoretically would know at least the rumors of my family from the 1840s. And we pull off to the side of the road. My father got out to walk and take a look someplace else. And my mother turned to me and she said the following profound words. She said, John, I am not going up that one-lane road. We're not doing that. You see, he, meaning my father, he has no brains. You have a brain. God gave you a brain.
Yeah.
And these are my people, not his.
Yeah.
I don't want to see them anymore.
Yeah.
She said, John, not for my sake, not for your sake, but for God's sake, take me to Dublin so I can get warm.
Yeah, you see, it's a different different cold over there. It's damp, it's and it gets into you.
It is.
And
it
everybody's
does.
Zone heats over there. Well, it's got more. Sure. They're very ahead of us now in the way they heat their houses. And my father used to. All the doors had to be shut to the room so you wouldn't waste heat.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were sitting in the living room, that was the only room that had heat.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not heating the whole house up.
Right.
And then when you go to bed, it's freezing.
Yeah.
That's why I always want to live in open spaces, lofts. All the doors are open, so the heat's even, you know.
All right. Now, when was the last time you were back in Ireland?
I was back visiting my mother in England, and she lives in the Cotswolds, last February. And then before that, it was quite a few years, about 7-8 years with Lorraine in Donegal.
Mm-hmm.
And but she goes back regularly.
Mm-hmm.
But my family and sisters live in England. So now when I go,
that's
I go,
where you go
there. And then.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's one of the trips I want to go back and see the pub in Kilkenny, because we have a poster here in Conway's of famous pubs in Kilkenny, and it's Conway's.
Uh-huh.
And then an NBC affiliate station in South Bend did a little documentary on us when we were opening up about Conway's here in Three Oaks. And, of course, it was telling them a lot of the same stories, and they were fascinated, too, that... that we'd ever think of opening a cafe without Wi-Fi. And especially me coming from working with Apple.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, well, how is that going to work? Isn't everybody want Wi-Fi? Well, I didn't want where people come in and just sit down at a table, open up a laptop and one coffee and sit there all day and don't communicate with who's sitting beside them.
Mm-hmm.
So that way I wanted it was that everybody could come in and just meet the person on the table next to him, and now it's terrific because everybody on a Saturday, they're starting to know each other. They got cottages, and one day I happened to say across where the counter where I was, I said, so where are you from? To one table, and they said, we're LaGrange, Illinois, and I said, I'm from LaGrange, and the table beside them said, we're from LaGrange. Four tables in there were from LaGrange, and the two tables sitting next to each other were four houses away, lived there for 12 years and didn't know their neighbors till they came to Conway's. Amen.
All right, Kieran Conway, the last question I have. If you had to do it all over again, where would you zig or zag that you didn't?
I wouldn't change, I don't think, hardly anything about my life because it's been amazing. I mean, I stand back sometimes, and especially the rugby, and go, I can't believe I played that game and the level it was at. But probably I might have gone more to the acting because my mother always thought I was seen once by the BBC and they said, would you like to come and audition as a cop? And there was a very big TV series at the time called Bergerac.
Yes.
I went and auditioned and I got the part. So I was in Bergerac for 6 months as a cop and did a lot of extra parts in it. And then from that, then somebody saw me and said, you look very American. Would you be interested in auditioning for a movie with Sir Laurence Olivier and Jackie Gleason? And I said, yeah. And with the audition, there was about 300 actors there. And they were kind of, what would you say, soap opera on TV a lot, and they started doing their American accents. We had to speak for a minute in American accent, and I got the part.
All right.
So it went on from that. Yeah. I think I'd have gone acting.
All right. Kieran Conway, it's been a delight talking to you. I'm glad you came back for a second show, and I would certainly urge people to go over and try out your restaurant in Three Oaks, right behind the Vickers Theater.
Vickers Theater, yeah, right beside it.
The name of our program is With Respect. We've had Kieran Conway on today. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you again, John. Thank you.
And remember, we are on every Sunday morning at 11 and every Thursday morning at 10. And until next time, remember our motto, if you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.